Welcome to VOA's special 2024 U.S. election coverage this Thursday morning. Republican Donald Trump will be returning to the White House in January. He not only won more than enough Electoral College votes on Election Day Tuesday, but he won the popular vote as well. In her concession speech Wednesday, Vice President Kamala Harris urged her Democratic supporters not to despair. We'll have more on that with our reporters. We'll also have an update with an analyst from a battleground state that turned from Democratic blue to Republican red, what the next Trump administration might look like, and much more. I'm Carol Van Dam, and with me tonight here in Washington is VOA Daybreak Africa host James Buddy to help us break it all down. Thanks for being here, James.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Early Wednesday, President-elect Trump won the election with 392 Electoral College votes to Harris's 224 votes. Stunning, many Democrats in the country. Standing by with us is VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Whitaker-Squara, who's been covering the Harris campaign headquarters at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Patsy, Harris said this is not a time to throw up our hands, adding this is a time to roll up our sleeves. What does she mean by that?
She means don't give up. There is work to be done. She encouraged especially young people to stay engaged and to be inspired by the courage of others, urging them to continue to organize and mobilize. And she made the call to wage this fight in the voting booth, in the courts, in the public square, and in quieter ways, she said, in how we live our lives by treating one another with kindness and respect.
Patsy, this is James Barté. What would you say were some of the big takeaways from Vice President Harris's speech?
Well, I think today she really sought to balance her respect for the will of the American voters, which, unlike Trump, she has committed to respect, with the dire warnings that she has issued about Trump on the campaign trail. Today, Harris highlighted the values of freedom, opportunity, and justice, and pledged to continue fighting for these ideals. And this is, I guess, her way of upholding her values while ensuring unity among a very polarized electorate, even as in her campaign she described Trump as a fascist with an autocratic aspiration who is out for unchecked power. I think today she also tried to offer comfort to people who are grieving and mourning. One line that people I spoke with mentioned often was when she said, "Only when it is dark enough can you see the stars." If people are feeling like they're entering a dark time, let us fill the sky with a light of billions of stars, the light of optimism, of faith, of truth, and of service. And I think one more that I'd like to add is that she did make a jab at Trump, even though she didn't mention his name at all, other than to say that she called him to congratulate him. She made a jab at Trump, who never conceded his loss to Biden in 2020, by saying that a fundamental principle of American democracy is that when we lose an election, we accept the results. And that principle is the only thing that is the one that distinguishes democracy from monarchy or tyranny.
Interesting. Patsy, Trump's return to the White House was enabled, really, by a major realignment of American voters that crashed decades of traditional coalitions. While he held on to majority support among men and white voters with no college degrees, but he made serious inroads in what has been seen as solid Democratic voters. Can you describe some of those voters?
Yeah, I think Democrats really banked on women, on youth, and people of color to propel Harris to the presidency. And in the end, many of these Democrats, these key demographics, really shifted towards Trump. The youth shifted away from Democrats. Young women were less enthused as well. While some of the young men that voted for Biden have also swung to Trump. And importantly, Latino and Black men also moved towards Trump. And I think these shifts were driven by a sense of disillusionment by the Biden administration policies, and by extension, the belief that Harris did not present herself to be the candidate that represented change. Instead, they believe the message that Trump is offering, which is that he will fix the problem, namely high inflation, even though we know that inflation right now is in fact at 2.4%, and also an unchecked border, despite the fact that it was Trump who killed the bipartisan immigration bill that Biden was ready to sign.
Thanks, Patsy. That's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Whitaker-Squara. Donald Trump announced his victory to an adoring crowd at his Mar-a-Lago club or residence early Wednesday morning. Here's a bit of what he had to say.
Well, I want to thank you all very much. I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. This will truly be the golden age of America. It's time to put the divisions of the past 4 years behind us. It's time to unite. And we're going to try. We're going to try. We have to try. And it's going to happen. Success will bring us together. I will govern by a simple motto: promises made, promises kept. We're going to keep our promises. Nothing will stop me from keeping my word to you, the people.
That was President-elect Trump speaking early this morning from his headquarters in West Palm Beach, Florida. A few hours ago, I talked to Michael Timothy Sedera. He's an adjunct professor of the humanities and sciences at Georgia State University at Clarkston, who is originally from Kenya, about why it was not Kamala Harris giving that victory speech and what may have gone wrong with her campaign. Let's take a listen.
In Harris' campaign, they forgot two things. One, I said they forgot the majority of the Africans and also the Latinos. So such states or such people are forgotten. And that's why the Democrats were so much concentrating on those major swing states. But they forgot that they needed also to win in the other states. That way, also, Mr. Trump and his campaign decided to target on that and also get more votes from them. So swinging up the states was so kind of like easy, especially targeting the younger people, promising that they can be able to get a job, the economy is going to come back. That was the main thing that really pulled up the younger people who voted for Mr. Trump better than Ms. Harris.
When you say she, her campaign forgot the Latinos, what do you mean exactly there? Are you talking about immigration or people that are naturalized citizens from Latin America or what?
Yes, I think they could have utilized that as towards Mr. Trump's statement. So if they had majored on to convincing them that they are going to do better, they're going to promise that the economy is going to become better than the way it is right now, I think that would have pulled up those, because most of them are hard workers. They know what they want. And that is why they were looking at it like, if they can be able to be assured of this, the job assurance, then that will be good. I think on that point, they must have missed a lot of points, yeah.
You know, Paul Walters has said that lots of young black men and Hispanic men switched from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party for Trump. Why is that? Can you try to explain that to us?
My look on that was when I was looking at the data that I was collecting and looking after the elections were most of these younger people want to see somebody who is aggressive. They want to see someone who can speak, someone who can be aggressively speak as with boldness to be able to say, hey, this is our country, this is where we want to. And that's the kind of Mr. Trump. But for Ms. Harris, being a little bit so much diplomatic and able to address some issues were not coming out clearly. And that's one point also the Democrats forgot, that the younger people, if you target the younger people, they are able to bring up more better change. And you can see the involvement of Mr. Musk, Elon Musk, into this situation, so promising and bringing up and promising to increase more jobs, more better environments for them. I think that way they were able to capture the minds of the younger people. Especially here in Georgia, I noted most of them were able to be turned aside just because of this point of looking at how can we make you better? How is it that we are going to improve our economy in the next few years to come?
Well, speaking of Elon Musk, you know, the owner and the head of Tesla and SpaceX and now X, which used to be known as Twitter, and the richest person in the whole world. Now, you know, he's very much in the Trump camp, and Trump has promised him quite a bit of latitude with an appointment. What do you make of all of that?
Well, that was another big catch, because he was able to reach out to people through the X media. He's able to use his own wealth to be able to declare that he can be able to support this, start projects, put people on the ground, be able to reach as many people as possible because they had money. So when these billionaires came out, they were able to go out there, solicit for for votes and also talk to people. So using the social media, that's one of the biggest tools that Mr. Musk was able to help the Trump administration the Trump team to be able to win now.
So let's zone in a little bit on your home state. Tell us what happened in Georgia, one of the seven battleground states. What did you see there?
Georgia was a big surprise. Honestly, it was expected that Ms. Harris was supposed to win or was to win the state. But because of the lack of this kind of planning and strategies on how to reach many people, we noticed that most of the people that came out to vote last time did not. And also, Ms. Harris had to lose a lot of votes from the Latinos and African black communities. So having lost about that, and Mr. Trump had to increase his votes of these groups by about up to 50%.
That was Michael Timothy Sedera, adjunct professor of the Humanities and Sciences Department at Georgia State University at Clarkston. He was speaking to me from Atlanta, Georgia.
A legal expert says it is very unlikely that President-elect Trump will face legal consequences for the criminal cases against him while he's in office. Trump is the first convicted felon to be elected president. He is facing sentences later this month in the state of New York after being convicted of falsifying business records. Trump has described all the cases against him as politically motivated. Stephen Wright is a clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School. He tells me that while there is no precedent, the charges will probably be dropped, at least for the federal cases.
We're going to get to that. That's in a few minutes. That's the James interview with, as he pointed out, with Stephen Wright. We're going to get to that in just a minute. In the meantime, virtually all polls said the presidential election was too close to call, but it turned out that Donald Trump was the winner by a fairly wide margin. The U.S. The Republicans also took control of the Senate. Many Democrats were stunned to hear the results of presidential and congressional races when they woke up Wednesday morning, not unlike the race between the first female presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, when Donald Trump won the last time. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science at Carroll University in Waukesha, Wisconsin, just outside Milwaukee, the state's biggest city. And here's her perspective from the battleground state that Trump put over the top to win.
And I think that given how close all the polling indicated and how tight the race seemed to be throughout most of the summer once Kamala Harris became the nominee, I think that it was a hard-fought campaign. And I think that what you're seeing in a lot of states is, you know, separation of 100,000 votes here or there in some of the closer states. But you're right in terms of the difference between 2016 is that Trump did carry the popular vote this time. And that's the difference between what happened 8 years ago.
And if you had to kind of dissect the Harris campaign and how she did, what do you think she could have done better? Or what do you think that maybe she didn't see that she was missing in her reaching out to prospective voters?
Well, I think that the Harris campaign was a very abbreviated campaign, so it's hard to know what could have been different or better. And lots of those folks who work on campaigns have suggested it was a pretty good campaign, but there's a lot of assessment of what people said in terms of motivating them to vote for Trump, and that included immigration, which was something the Biden administration was not seen as doing anything about, and she was tied to the Biden administration in that regard. And so regardless of what she proposed to do about immigration, I think that the immigration issue, particularly among people who ended up voting for Trump, who may have been wavering back and forth, that seemed to be a compelling issue. The economy is, moved from 9% inflation to about 2% inflation levels, but people are still experiencing inflation. And I think that was another component of, what was going on for voters. And so I'm not necessarily sure that the campaign itself could have been differently charted, particularly over the course of 100 days.
When you talk about immigration, do you think that she needed to try to separate herself more from Joe Biden on the issues and the economy, that the things that it really mattered to them?
I mean, she could have potentially tried to separate herself more distinctly from Joe Biden, but again, she had proposed policies that were different than the ones that the Biden administration had been pursuing. At the same time, I think it's more difficult for her, or it was to some degree more difficult for her, to not be labeled as the incumbent because she's the vice president of the incumbent administration.
You know, there's a lot of people that are just left very concerned today. They're afraid. They're worried that some of the things that Trump has said on the campaign trail, that, you know, he's promised to deport millions of people immediately from the U.S. He's promising to go after his political enemies. He's promising to go after journalists, too, as a media organization. So where does that leave us? Do you think that he's going to follow through on that, first of all?
Well, I mean, he did talk a lot about these things on the campaign trail, and they are things that motivated a lot of voters to, you know, support him and vote for him. And these are things that he didn't say just once, but he said them many times. And so I would think in some capacity he may try to pursue them. And he has a Senate that is a Republican majority that doesn't have sort of wavering members of the majority inside of it, because they have enough folks to overcome potentially one or two divergent voices, mm-hmm. shall we say, within that majority. And he may very well, I don't know where the House is at this point, but, you know, he may very well also have a House of Representatives that is majority Republican. And he has had, you know, a lot of support from the judiciary branch for a variety of his policies over the years. So I'm assuming that he's going to move forward with a number of the policies that he has articulated.
That is Lily Gorin, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha, Wisconsin. She was speaking with me earlier today.
A legal expert says it is very unlikely that President-elect Trump will face legal consequences for the criminal cases against him while he is in office. Trump is the first convicted felon to be elected president. He is facing sentencing later this month in the state of New York after being convicted of falsifying business records. Trump has described all the cases against him as politically motivated. Stephen Wright is a clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School. He tells me that while there is no precedent, the charges will probably be dropped, at least for the federal cases.
The president was facing two categories of criminal cases. The first were federal cases, and under our Constitution, the president has a great deal of power in influencing how those type of federal prosecutions can happen. For example, the president has the pardon power where he can say, regardless of whether somebody did something, I'm excusing it on behalf of the United States. Likewise, the president presumably will appoint an attorney general who will fire the special prosecutor. It's also very possible that some court or even possibly the Department of Justice will reach the conclusion that a sitting president or a president-elect cannot actually be tried in a criminal court during their term of office. So I think it's very, very unlikely, if not almost nearly impossible, that President Trump will face any consequences based upon the federal claims. Now, he still has two state claims. He's already been convicted in New York. And of course, there are the election interference claims in Georgia. You know, there's no precedent for this. So it's really impossible to say. But I think the conventional wisdom is that the federal courts will probably not allow state courts, that is the New York and Georgia courts, to handcuff literally and metaphorically a president of the United States. There's already a great deal of case law that suggests that this type of litigation really binds the hands of a president and makes it very difficult for this person to run the country. And so, once again, there's no precedent, so this is just guessing, some educated guessing, but I think it's really unlikely that those state court cases are going to be able to go forward, especially in any way that might result in President-elect Trump serving time.
One of the campaign themes of now President-elect Trump was the mass deportation of illegal immigrants. Can this be done without legal challenges?
There's almost definitely going to be legal challenges. There are certain rights that even persons facing deportation are entitled to, including potentially access to the immigration court. So I expect that there will be a great deal of litigation on individual cases, as well as the president's broad power to conduct, as in the president's word, sort of massive roundups and deportations.
Stephen Wright is a clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School. He was speaking with us from Madison, Wisconsin. Trump has been charged in federal courts for allegedly trying to overturn the results of the 2020 election and for improperly retaining government records. In the state of Georgia, he faces charges for attempting to overturn his 2020 election loss.
America's allies in Europe have congratulated Trump following his comprehensive victory in Tuesday's presidential election, despite widespread concern over what his second term may mean for transatlantic relations. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Donald Trump made a historic comeback in Tuesday's U.S. presidential election.
America has given us an unprecedented and powerful mandate.
U.S. allies in Europe are pondering what the future president will do with that mandate. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer got off to a difficult start after the Trump campaign criticized his Labour Party officials for offering advice to Trump's rival, Kamala Harris, on the campaign trail. Starmer was quick to send his congratulations.
We live in probably more volatile world than we've lived in for many decades. It is absolutely crucial that we have a strong relationship, that strong special relationship.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said things would be very different with Trump in the White House, but pledged to remain a reliable transatlantic partner.
This also applies with regard to the threat that all NATO allies believe Russia poses to security in the Euro-Atlantic area.
Trump has criticized U.S. support for Ukraine as it fights Russia's invasion, and there are fears he could end military and financial aid for Kyiv. In his first term, Donald Trump threatened to pull the United States out of NATO, claiming allies were taking advantage of the U.S. But in a statement Wednesday, NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said that Trump had, quote, turned the tide on European defense spending, improved transatlantic burden sharing, and strengthened alliance capabilities. Meanwhile, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban made no secret of his preference for a Trump victory. When it came, he said, quote, for the world, it means the hope of peace. French President Emmanuel Macron and Donald Trump have had a volatile relationship, but Macron said Wednesday he was ready to work together, quote, with your convictions and mine, with respect and ambition, for more peace and prosperity. In reality, European allies are preparing for a stormy ride, says foreign policy analyst Garrett Martin of American University.
The 4 years where Trump was in office were rather tumultuous. There were moments of constant bickering, a lot of disunity, a lack of cohesion. So I think that was already at a time which was less arguably dangerous than it is now. We're now in the midst of a major war in Europe that's been going on for 2.5 years.
Meanwhile, next week's crucial COP29 climate summit in Azerbaijan is likely to be overshadowed by Trump's victory. The former president pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord in 2017, claiming it was unfair to the United States. His successor, Joe Biden, rejoined on his first day in office. But there are fears Trump will once again quit the agreement, even as scientists warn of catastrophic global warming without immediate action. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
And that is all the time we have. We've been talking about the U.S. election in this special live program from our Washington, D.C. studios. I'm Carol Van Dam, along with Daybreak host James Buddy. Our thanks to VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wittick-Quisquara for joining us, and thank you for being here. You are listening to The Voice of America.
VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source